Ruth chapter 2. Now, the last time we were together when we went through Ruth chapter 1, but there might be a few people that are joining us for the first time, and so I just want to do kind of a quick review. You could definitely read this on your own as well, but we have a man by the name of Elimelech, and he's married to a woman by the name of Naomi, and they live in a town called Bethlehem. Bethlehem means house of bread. Now remember that the Jews were brought into the promised land. This was their land. They were called to dwell in the land. They were never, ever, ever, and just to make this clear, ever called to dwell anywhere outside the land. Not only that, certain tribes were told to dwell in certain parts of the land. And guess what? They should never, ever, ever go outside that tribal area as well. They need to dwell in the land and have faith, knowing that God is going to provide as they worship God in spirit and truth and obey what the law of Moses has spoken. And you can read in Deuteronomy chapter 8 the pros and the cons and the blessings and the cursings if they weren't going to follow after God. Now, these guys are living specifically in a place that's called House of Bread. This is God's faithfulness. This is a place that I am going to provide for you. This is God's place. And to trust and have faith, no matter what goes on, that God is going to be the provider of their every need. Now, as they were living there in Bethlehem, there was a famine in the land. Well, famine comes because of unfaithfulness, according to Deuteronomy 28. It's one of the curses for when you go after false idols. And so this famine is a judgment, and instead of repenting and seeking the Lord and hoping that he will have a change of heart and that he will continue to bless again, these guys leave. They go to Moab. They're not supposed to go to Moab. They're supposed to dwell in the land by faith, but they go into Moab. And so they have two sons, Chilion and Mahlon. These two sons married Moabite women, one by the name of Orpah and the other one by the name of Ruth. While they're living there in the plains of Moab, Elimelech dies. So he dies when they're there. And then both his sons die. And so Naomi is now in Moab with her two daughter-in-laws. And so you can read about that in chapter 1. Well, now that the famine is over in Bethlehem, Naomi thinks it's probably best to go back. But before she goes back, she tells her daughter-in-laws to go back to their families. Don't come with her into Bethlehem, into her own land. There is no future for them anymore for them to be hanging out with her. There are no more sons in her womb. There are no more kids that will grow up that they'll be able to marry. There is no future if they go with her, is what Naomi says. And so Orpah listens to her, and it was a pretty sad farewell, but she goes back to her own country. She goes back to her own family. But Ruth didn't do that. Ruth decided, no, I'm going to stay. Now, the interesting thing about Ruth is that even though one daughter-in-law listens and turns back, Ruth makes a commitment that is known as chesed or hased. And this is a Hebrew word, and it is a word that means loving kindness and loyal love. And so the rabbis taught that all through the book of Ruth is God's chesed, and it's his way of showing loving kindness and loyalty to his people. It's displayed by Ruth. It's displayed by Boaz. And so we see this chesed all through the book of Ruth. Chesed requires three things. It requires extraordinary commitment. Orpah didn't practice that. Ruth did. It required extraordinary risks. Ruth did this. Later on, we're going to see that Boaz does it as well. It also requires that it be done in a proper way and be carried out in a proper way. And so when we look at Ruth's declaration out of her own mouth of her commitment, not only to God, but to Naomi and her people and the land. And so in Ruth chapter 1, verse 16, it says, "But Ruth said, 'Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And where you die, I will die. and there will I be buried. So the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her, meaning Naomi. I can't convince her. She's going to come with me no matter what. Her loyalty to Naomi was, for wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Her loyalty to Naomi's people, the Jews, your people shall be my people. Her loyalty toward God, and your God, my God. And her loyalty to the land. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. And so she binds herself with the word here by saying, and the Lord do so to me also if I don't do these things. And so she is making a pledge and an oath and a commitment before God and before Naomi. And so she is showing her chesed, her loving kindness, her loyalty, a committed love. And Naomi knows there's no way to convince her to go back. Ruth has made up her mind, and she's determined in her heart to follow God, and she's determined in her heart to love and serve Naomi and her people and her God. Now this is, to me, and I mentioned this last time, that Daniel has nothing on Ruth. Daniel, when he was brought into a land that was going to be hostile to him and hostile to everything he believes and things like that, he determined in his heart not to defile himself with the king's delicacies. The king says, you're going to eat this food, as he goes off and he's taken into captivity there in Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar. And he's put under the authority of the guard there. And the guard has pretty much told him, that these are the ways that you are going to feed the young adults that have come from Israel. And so you're going to make sure they eat these kinds of food, and we're going to teach them these things, and we're going to assimilate them into our culture. Well, being a good Jew, you have certain dietary laws. And those dietary laws was your way of saying, I'm going to follow you no matter what. And so you have told me there's certain things I can eat, certain things that I can't eat. And it's for my own good. Well, if you don't eat what they are going to tell you to eat, then they're going to kill you. Okay, but do I compromise in order to save my own life? And Daniel says, no. If they kill me, they kill me. But I'm not going to disobey my God. And so he determines in his heart not to defile himself. Well, Ruth is doing the exact same thing. I've determined in my heart that your God is going to be my God. It doesn't matter how uncomfortable this is going to be. It doesn't matter that by me going with you, I am putting myself in a very, very difficult circumstance. I am probably putting myself to be a widow forever. I'm putting myself into a position where I'm going to probably be poor forever. But she is saying, I would rather follow and commit to a God and have difficulties than go back to my old ways of ease and comfort without God. That's Ruth. That's amazing. And yet that is what she chooses to be. Ruth has taken a step of faith, and she's pledging her loyalty with God. In 2 Chronicles 16:9, God's word says, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are loyal to him. Ruth is becoming loyal to God, stepping out on faith. God is going to work on her behalf. He's going to show himself strong, as we're going to see here in chapter 2. We're going to see the favor of God being poured out on her because she is taking a step of faith, one that is embedded in loyalty to God. That's awesome. That's awesome. And I just love Ruth's testimony. And so God is going to show himself strong on Ruth's behalf. Naomi right now is not in the best place. She's kind of in a spiritual fog, no doubt about it. And let's give Naomi a little bit of empathy. I mean, she lost her husband. She's lost both her sons. I mean, her whole life has radically changed. And so, she's definitely depressed. There's no question about it. And so because of that, she's in a place that all backsliders find themselves. That if they really do come back to the Lord, they usually come back to the Lord very, very empty. Because they have chosen to be outside of the place of God's calling. And you never want to be in that place. And if you ever do, you're going to find yourself being chastised and you're going to find yourself being bankrupt. It's always best to be in the place that God has called you to be. And I always see this with people. All of a sudden, I'll see somebody kind of come here to Horizon. Man, I haven't seen you in a long time. And they are humble, and they are broken, and they have been beat up by the world. And I go, where have you been? I've been around. I just haven't been coming here. Well, if you haven't been coming here and you're not going to another fellowship, that's fine if you're going to another fellowship, so long as you're in fellowship. But if you're not going anywhere, that tells me something. It tells me that you and the Lord aren't doing well, that you haven't been following what God wants you to do, because if so, we would see you here or you'd be involved in another fellowship somewhere where that you're growing and you've planted yourself. But it happens all the time. When you're in that place of being bankrupt and empty, it's because you've been in that backslidden state. You've been in that place where God has not called you to be, and they were never called to be in Moab. And so she doesn't really take ownership of that disobedience. Instead, she kind of plays the blame game and kind of blames God. And so she kind of steps back into Bethlehem, and it says here in verse 19 of chapter 1, now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem, and it happened when they had come to Bethlehem, and all the city was excited because of them, that the women said, is this Naomi? They're excited. Their family is coming back. We've known Naomi, we've known Elimelech, we've known this family for a long time. We're bummed to see them go off to Moab, but it's great to see them come back. God is blessing here. We just want to welcome them back. There's no condemnation being laid upon them. There's no judgment that's being laid upon them. And I love this because that's exactly the way we need to be here as well. There are people that are just going to stray. There's people that are going to stray. And then when they come back, we don't need to be there and go, you shouldn't have left. Heathen pig, what are you doing? You know, no. We should just be thankful. I'm so glad that you found your way back. This is great. You know, yeah, but I don't care what I've been. I don't care what you've been doing. What I care about is that you're here now. How can we move forward? That's all I care about. Have you asked God to forgive you? Yeah, then you're forgiven. We don't need to go over it. Let's just move forward. Let's just move forward. And that's the great thing about God. And you can see the excitement of Bethlehem. They're excited that Naomi is coming back. And so it even says that here. And it says that, and the city was excited because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? But she kind of puts a damper on the party. She says to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me? You know what, Naomi? You know what that says? That says that God loves you. That says that you're one of His. Because you know what? God does not discipline other people's children. He only disciplines his own. I'm here to tell you, I'm not here to discipline your kids. I'm here to discipline my own kids. Why? Because I love them. And I'm here to tell you something. I would love to be able to say, and I love your kids just as much as my kids. I don't. No way. I love my kids a whole lot more. You know why? They're my kids. And because of that, I discipline them because I love them. God does the exact same thing. God does the exact same thing. All you have to do is go to Hebrews chapter 11 and 12, and he tells us about how he chastises those he loves. Those are his. They're his kids. He's going to chastise them. So if you've been chastised by God, it's because you're one of his kids, and he loves you. And if you're successful away from him, you will never come back to him. He can't let it happen that way. He can't let it happen that way. And so here, it goes on, it says, so Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. And there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. Now, here we're being introduced to Boaz, kind of like we said the last time, this whole book is there's a lot of things we can glean from it, but one of the things I want to make sure that we do not miss is the fact that this whole book is a typology, that there are types or pictures of people in here that represent the church, the Jews, Jesus Christ. You look at Naomi. Naomi is a Jew. She represents the Jews, Israel. You have Ruth. She is a Moabite. You know what's interesting when you go through the book of Ruth? even though your God is going to be my God, your people are going to be my people, she is always referred to as a Moabitess. Always, through the whole book. She's never looked at as being embraced and being part of Israel. She's always a Moabitess all through the book of Ruth. And so she represents, she's a Gentile, so she represents the church. And then you have Boaz, as we're going to find out, is a kinsman, a near relative, a kinsman, not only a kinsman, but a kinsman who redeems, meaning redeems the property of Elimelech. Now, we had mentioned this last week, that Elimelech, obviously, in order to go to Moab, had to sell his property. Well, you don't really sell your property in Israel. You do, you sell it to somebody, but it's only on a temporary basis. If that person ever comes back, wants his property back, whatever he sold it for, he could buy it back, get it redeemed. But if he comes back and he's broken and he doesn't have the money to redeem that, then he needs a relative, a kinsman, to redeem it, to buy it back for him. Adam, when he sinned, what happened? When he sinned, the whole world came crashing down in a sense, because God gave him, God gave Adam to be a steward over the whole world. And as soon as he decided to obey Satan as opposed to God, he put that into Satan's hand. He sold it off and became bankrupt. He can't ever redeem it back again. But there is a person that can redeem it back. We do have a kinsman redeemer in the person of Jesus Christ. We're going to see this more in the next couple of chapters. But just know this, that unless you understand the book of Ruth here, the kinsman redeemer, some near kinsman buying back that which you have lost, you can't understand Revelation chapter 5. When you have the church, 24 elders, and who's worthy to take the scroll? Well, no one's worthy. Nobody. And they're crying and they're going. And then all of a sudden someone stands up who looks like a lamb who was slain. And he is found worthy. And he goes and takes that scroll. And that scroll is the title deed to this earth. And he redeems that. He buys back that with what? His precious blood. He buys it back from those whom which it was lost. He's a kinsman redeemer. And so we're going to see this transaction kind of happen with Boaz here in the next chapter. And so we know that Naomi is a Jew, is a type of Israel. We see Ruth, who is a Gentile, is a type of the church. And we know that Boaz is a near relative, a kinsman redeemer, is a type of Jesus Christ. And so here we're introduced to Boaz, means in whom is strength. He's introduced as a relative here. It's not the same word that we're going to be introduced again to Boaz here at the end of this chapter when Naomi goes, he's a relative of ours, but the word relative there and the relative here is a different word. The one here is a word moda, which carries the meaning of familiarity, acquaintance of a friend. But later on in the chapter, we're going to see Naomi go, he's a relative of ours, and the word is gael, meaning near relative, near kinsman. He can help us tremendously is what they're thinking now. And so it's very exciting to get there at the end of this chapter. He's a relative of Elimelech, from the family of Elimelech. Boaz is referred to here as a man of great wealth. It says, it's more literally mighty man of wealth. The word mighty is a Hebrew word, gabor, which means a mighty man of valor, meaning he's earned his valor in battle. It speaks of military strength or some military endeavor where he was heroic in some sort of military battle. And so this could possibly mean, and it probably has great reference to, that he took part in some battle, possibly coming alongside one of the deliverers in the book of Judges, or maybe even quite possibly before that. He was one of the ones that helped to deliver some of the Canaanites out of the land so they can settle there in Bethlehem, being a faithful man. And so, but we do know that he is a mighty man in the way of valor. And so we see that. We also know that he's very wealthy. He's a landowner who's also a true believer in God, as we'll see here in a moment. And so in verse 2, it says, so Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I might find favor. Well, who's him in whose sight I might find favor? She doesn't know, but she knows with all the landowners out there and it's the time of the barley harvest and everything else, she's just going to trust and have faith that if you let me go, Naomi, I'll go and I'll glean in the fields. And I'll just hope that somebody will have favor on me and allow for me to glean in their fields. As we're going to see in a moment, she actually asked permission to do this as opposed to just taking our initiative to just jump in a field and start gleaning some of the harvest there. And so she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Now, I don't want to miss the significance here of Ruth's humility. It would have been very, very humiliating for Naomi, with the background that she's had, leaving so full, coming back so empty, to have to now start to glean in another person's field. Very, very humiliating. Not to mention that she's maybe a little bit up there in age. How is she going to provide for? If Ruth didn't come with her, she'd be in the fields gleaning. She'd be the one in the field doing that in order to be able to provide bread for herself. And it's like Ruth is saying, "Let me go. You stay here. I'll glean enough for the both of us. Let me go and do this for you." The humility, the servant attitude of thinking about someone else and saying, "Let me do this for you. I'll be able to glean enough for both of us. Let me go do this." It's just so precious. It's so precious. And shows she's willing to take on that humiliation to glean in the fields to put food on the table. Under the law of Moses, this is a great way in the sense of welfare. The Israelites were not allowed to strip the fields clean at the time of a harvest. Instead, they were to leave some of the grain that would fall during the harvesting for the poor, for the strangers, the fatherless, and the widows. And they weren't, and the corners of the field also, they weren't allowed to harvest those at all. So they were supposed to leave these corners as well as they're reaping the fields. If grain falls to the ground, they got to leave it there in order for the poor and the fatherless and the widows. In Leviticus chapter 19, verse 9, it says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." Leviticus 23:22. "When you reap the harvest of your land, and you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field. When you reap, you shall not gather any gleaning from the harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God." And then Deuteronomy 24:19. "When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, the widow. The Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." Now, I love this. But what I love mostly about it is that, and there's always exceptions to everything, you know. Wonder if that poor person is lame and can't get to the field. Yeah, I think we need to be able to bring them something if that's the case. But isn't it interesting that God doesn't just give them stuff. They still have to go out in the field. They still have to go and get it. Because God didn't want to have a whole bunch of welfare cases that didn't need to be so. Can you stand up? Can you walk? Are you healthy? Well, yeah. Well, then get out there and work. Where? Go into the fields and pick up the grain. And take the husk and go like this and take the kernels and start to gather that. And then go home and pound it and make it into fine flour, and then you have bread for your family. Go do something. He doesn't just bring it to them, but it's there in the field if they want to go and get it. And they do have to go get it. And so Ruth offers to go out to the field and do the humiliating work of gleaning grain so as to save Naomi that embarrassment of going out herself. And I love this because she's willing to go out by herself, not really knowing where to go. She doesn't know the layout of the land. She doesn't know anyone. And she's just going to go and step out in faith, knowing that this is what you do if you don't have, you know, money and things like that. This is what the poor does. They're poor. She's going to go and do it. I want you to go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. There's always exceptions to this, and we understand that here at Horizon Christian Fellowship. But I want you to know something. It says here in verse 7 of 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 7, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked with labor, toil night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. Until you can get that down, God will not bless in your life, period, end of story. If you're not willing to work, if you're not willing to do what it takes, Ruth is willing to humble herself. She knows no one. She doesn't care. She'll do whatever it takes to put food on the table. And there's so many people that sometimes we come alongside and they're not willing to do that. And I had to bring him there. I said, you're not willing to work. Well, I have this, and well, I could if you could help me with this. And well, there's always these, and it's like, work. Work. There's a place that you can go. I know you have to get up early. I know you got to be there at the crack of dawn, and it is day labor. You can do this. You can do this. But you don't want to. And so you're not willing to work. And so long as that's the case, God can't bless. God cannot bless. He wants to, but he can't. Why don't you go to Psalm 37? These aren't Dave's words. Okay, you can get mad at me all you want, but these aren't Dave's words. They're Jetta's, actually. It's just so you know. If you get mad. This is King David. And I don't think he's lying here. Verse 25 said, I have been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken nor his descendants begging bread. I don't think David's a liar. I don't think the Holy Spirit is a liar. Does that mean that you sometimes don't fall into a hard situation? No, it doesn't mean that at all. We're looking at a complete work here. We're not talking about 2 or 3 weeks of falling into a Christ situation. You can't find a job. We're talking over a life's body of work here. And David says, I've been young and I'm old. I have not seen the righteous forsaken nor his descendants begging bread. I'm here to tell you I haven't either. Never. I see, you know over time, if someone is righteous before the Lord and doing the things that they're supposed to do, you know over time. And those people, I have never, ever seen begging bread, ever. Have I seen them making less money than they did before? Uh-huh. Have I seen them have to sell a home and get a smaller home? Uh-huh. Have I seen them have to get rid of 2 cars and get a much smaller economic bill? Uh-huh. But I've never seen them begging bread. And the reason is because they have faith and they'll do whatever it takes to put food on the table. I got to tell you, I get so blessed to be able to see people that are 60, 65, sometimes 70 years of age delivering pizza. You know what that tells me? That's the generation that understood what it took to put food on the table. And they're willing to do whatever it takes. And they're there as an example to the younger generation that is sitting around because their $80,000 job is not there anymore. And they're still looking for that $80,000 job. And they're not willing to take something else that maybe only pays $36,000. And we have created a system that doesn't make sense for them to do that either. Because they can collect unemployment off that $80,000 job that they had in order to, so they can still maintain the lifestyle they had before. And I'm here to tell you that's sin. And it's wrong. But we've developed this system that they can do that. People aren't willing really to do whatever it takes to put food on the table. And yet I'm blessed to know many of people that have. And I've seen God bless. Seen him bless with their family and where they're at in their relationship with the Lord. And how thankful they are now for the smaller things. Whereas before that kind of escaped them because they were kind of in a higher income bracket. Now they're not, but they now just take those simple little things they don't take for granted anymore. And they have more joy in their life too. And they're satisfied. And that's God's blessing. Ruth is like that. I'll do whatever it takes. I don't care what anybody thinks. You know, I'm here to serve Naomi. I'm going to serve the Lord. I'm going to serve these people. This is the way I've chosen. I love that about Ruth. I love that. When we trust God and go out and work, God does provide. He is the provider of every need. And he'll do that. But if you aren't working, he won't. He won't. And you've kind of hamstrung him. So Ruth is stepping out in faith in him whose side I might find favor. She's trusting God that someone's going to grant her favor. I'm just going out in faith. I don't know how this really works, but I know people are supposed to glean. I'll glean. But she's never done that before. And Naomi says, go, my daughter, showing your love for her. And so it says, then she left, went, and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. So she just happens. There's no happen chance with the Lord. You know what? If you trust God, he's going to direct your steps. You know, for somebody who's so young in the faith, like Ruth, she certainly got it very quickly. It's amazing to me how many people could be saying, oh, I've been a Christian now for 10 years, 15 years, and don't have the basics down of what faith is all about. Going out and doing what you're supposed to do, knowing what God has said, and just trusting him that he's going to work it out. Taking that step of faith. And just so you understand the process here, the reapers, when they're harvesting or reaping an area, they will go in, the reapers are the ones that cut down the stalks with their sickles, okay? They cut down the stalks. The women will come up behind them and gather them and bind them in bundles or sheaves, okay? And during that process, you know that heads of grain are being knocked off and things like that, and they're falling to the ground. Well, until they then gather those sheaves, the gleaners can't come into the field. So they've done a certain area, now you can go in and start to glean because they're working on another area, and then when they're done with that, you can go in and glean. So the reapers are there in that field. You as a gleaner can't be in that field yet, okay? You can't be in that field yet. And so Ruth goes out and begins to glean, and now behold, Boaz comes from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you, and they answered him, the Lord bless you. Boaz comes, greets his servants. It shows what a godly man he is because of this greeting, the salutation that he gives. He tells them and he says, the Lord be with you. And it shows the kind of men that are working, and the Lord be with you. And so when we went through the book of Judges, we were able to see how far Israel has fallen, that they're going after pagan gods. They're not doing what's right. But God always has a remnant. No matter how bad the world or society gets, there's always a remnant. And Boaz is just showing he's one of those guys. He's one of the remnants. He's doing what he's supposed to do. So whereas pretty much the whole book of Judges showed the unfaithfulness of Israel, Ruth shows it, the little pockets of remnants of the faithful ones in Israel. And so Boaz is one of them. And he said, Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you as well. And so and then it says, Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, so the servant who's in charge, he'd be a foreman, who's young, and he says, whose young woman is this? So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, it is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. This servant that Boaz is talking about here, again, he would be the overseer, the foreman. He'd be responsible to oversee the workers, make sure that if they're thirsty, that there's water there for them, taking care of them as they're going through the field to provide the meal for them, as well at the end of the day to be able to pay them their wages. So he's the foreman, he's the overseer, making sure that the operation continues to go forward. It's obviously a small town. Everybody knows everyone. Every time I try and look up about what the demographic would have been at that time, we're talking about a few hundred people there in Bethlehem. And so you're going to know everybody. Many of you here probably grew up in a small town of a few hundred people, and everybody knows everybody's business. If you come from a huge city like I have, I mean, you barely even know the people on your block. It's that kind of a deal. But here, everybody would know everyone. And so Boaz knows all the female workers that are working for him. He knows all the men and the women and the young children in the area, and he knows where everybody's gleaning and working in different fields and stuff like that. Whoa, who's this? He obviously takes notice and wants to know who she is, and so he, you know, the overseer there tells him and says, hey, this is the Moabite woman. This is one that came back with Naomi. And so in verse 7 here, This is what Ruth said to the overseer, the foreman here. And so he's just relating this to Boaz. And so it says here, and she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she has rested a little in the house. She asks permission first. She doesn't just go gleaning in a field. She wants to know whose field it is. Who am I supposed to ask? I don't want to be presumptuous. Showing how polite she is, how courteous she is. And she's going to ask first to glean and then gather. Can I glean and then can I pile it up and then come back and gather it later? And so she's asking about that, and she's asking permission. And obviously, this foreman gave her permission. And so she's been working all morning, except for a short rest. There's obviously some house where maybe you can go and rest and put your feet up. And it's probably warm, and she probably needs some shade, or she needs a drink of water or something like that. But she goes and takes a little rest in the house. And so Boaz gets this information, and now Boaz goes and speaks directly to Ruth. And it says, then Boaz said to Ruth, you will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from where the young men have drawn. He's saying, look, you're not an employee, but I take care of my employees. Just hang close to my employees. And everything my employees get in the way of me providing for them when they're thirsty and hungry, I'm going to give to you as well. And he says, stay close to the young maidens. The reapers, again, would be the men. The young maidens would be the ones that gather the stalks up and bind them into bundles or sheaves. And so Boaz, again, is telling Ruth, hang out with them. Again, you wouldn't glean where they're reaping. So he's saying, I want you to go up with them. Well, you're going to get the best of the best because no one's going to be able to jump in front of you and grab any grain and things like that. The field wouldn't have been gleaned before you got there. I mean, you're right there as they're, you know, collecting the bundles. Things are being cut down. You're behind the gals that are gathering the bundles. And as they're doing that, you know, the plentiful grain is falling off. You get the best of the best right there. You get to grab all this stuff. And so he's saying, I want you to be close to where the pickings would be plentiful. And so, again, this would identify Ruth with the workers there. And so people would think, oh, she's one of Boaz's young women. Don't touch her, you know. Any sort of young ruffian out there that just thinks that nobody's going to care about her and I could do whatever I want with her. It's like, uh-uh. Now Boaz's property is what it's going to look like. And so, and again, and when water is being drawn for the servants, it's going to be provided for her as well. So she falls on her face, bows down to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? She's so surprised to be the recipient of so much grace. That's the way we should be before our Savior. Because Boaz, again, he represents the kinsman redeemer and is blessing her for no other reason than he's choosing to. Why? Because she has made a profession of God. God will do the same thing with us. He wants to bestow so much grace upon us, and he can, and he wants to, but we should be humble just like Ruth and ask, I don't deserve this. Sometimes we get the attitude, I've been doing this and this. How come you're not doing this for me? We should have the attitude of Ruth. Anything that comes our way, Lord, I don't deserve. Why are you doing this? Because he chooses to. He loves you. This word, foreigner, when it says here, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? The word notice here is actually knowledge. So the word for knowledge and the word for foreigner are actually from the same root word, meaning to be strange or to be unknown. I'm told that as I was studying for this, this is kind of a play on words. The word here is nakri, a term for a non-Israelite. And so it's kind of a play on words. Why have you taken notice, or why do you have knowledge for a non-Israelite? In other words, it's like in the English is, why have you taken notice of the unnoticeable? Why have recognized the unrecognizable? Why have you gone to such lakes as that? And so she's being as humble as she can. She doesn't want to cause any problems. She doesn't want to. She's just blown away by the grace that she's receiving. She doesn't understand. She goes, I don't need this special treatment. I'm a nobody. But look what Boaz says. Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me, all that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to people who you did not know before. The Lord repay your work. A full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Boaz knew all about Ruth. He just never met her before, didn't know what she looked like. But everybody knows what goes on in the town. Obviously, Naomi has told people, you know, "Well, who's she? Why is she with you?" "Oh, man, let me tell you about her. I tried to tell her to go back, but she is so loyal. She's been so faithful. She's been such a blessing since my son married her. She's been such a help to me that even after her own husband died, she was still there to serve me, help me on my way here, and has pledged allegiance to not only me and our people here, but to God and the land." Everybody's going, "Whoa, she left all just to follow our God." And so her reputation goes before her, and her loving kindness, that chesed, and that loving kindness and loyalty is becoming legendary about her already. It already goes before her. Ruth would have had no idea that by choosing God and being faithful and loyal, by choosing God, that she would have been granted favor in this way. But that's God for you. He'll always show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are loyal to him. And so Boaz says a special blessing over Ruth for God's protection, his provision. Little did Boaz know that he would be the one called to fulfill that blessing in her life, because he is going to protect her and provide for her later on. And so then it says, "Then she said, 'Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I'm not like one of your maidservants.'" The word maidservant is very interesting here. It's a shifka. It's a word that speaks of the lowest of the low of the female slaves, the lowest social class of female slaves. There are two classes. One is a ma. If that word is being used, it speaks of a woman that is a slave but could be married by a free man in Israel and would be able to have the benefits of being family. But if it's shifka, like she says here, it denotes to a slave girl who belongs to the lowest social class and more responsible for the menial tasks, would be nothing more than a person's property, wouldn't be able to marry or anything like that. And she doesn't even consider herself that. She says, "I'm not even worthy of that. I'm below that. Well, why are you even taking notice of me? I'm so thankful for this." But she says, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, have spoken kindly to the lowest of the low, though I'm not like one of your maidservants." And she's just assuming he probably has maidservants that would be of this class, and she's not even worthy of that. She says it's lower than that of who she is. You know who else thought themselves like this? Paul. You know, I've never understood this. When people start to walk with the Lord, how they feel better about themselves in a sense of who they are in the Lord. Because see, as you get close to the Lord, you should not become proud or boastful. You should become more and more humble. Because as you get close to the light, it should reveal more and more dirt on yourself. And I've mentioned this time and time again, we've all been in front of a discriminating light. You hate them, don't you? Shows every little mark and pock and, you know, and zit and blackhead and everything else. And you're going, "Come on, cool the light. Let's get something that's tainted a little bit, something that I look much better in." But that's the way it is. You think you have something clean on, but you get in the discriminating light, and all of a sudden you see stains and other things. And you go, "Whoa, you want to back off." But we need to get closer to light, because as we get closer to light, that is going to reveal the things that are wrong, the things that are dirty, the things that do need to change. And so Paul felt this way. He says, "For I'm the least of the apostles, of whom I'm not worthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God." Right before he died, he said, "This is a faithful saying, worthy of all acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am chief." Really, Paul? You had so many awesome things to say, and man, you were so close to God. And but as you get close to God, the more you realize how undeserving you are to even have this relationship with him. You're not worthy for him to have died for you and things like that. And you have this humble heart. And I see this with Ruth. I mean, she's getting blessed, and instead of going, she's even more humble. She's going, man, I don't deserve this. That's right, because that's what grace is. Unmerited favor. You don't deserve it. You can't deserve it. And so sometimes when we think we're doing really good with the Lord, we're almost expecting a blessing. And when it doesn't come, you kind of go, how come he's not doing this for me? Why? Because I, deserve it? We really don't. It's his unmerited favor. And then it says, now Boaz said to her at mealtime, come here and eat of the bread. Dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed the parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. So now she's sitting down. Mealtime would have been around noon, and then they would have gone out and worked the rest of the day. And so she's being invited. There's no gleaners that are invited to the employees that are doing all the work and having the owner bless them. That doesn't happen, but it happens here. And he invites her in. And she gets this vinegar. It's kind of a spice vinegar. You know when you go to a macaroni grill and they give you the bread and they make that little olive oil concoction and they put all the nice spices in there and stuff and you dip your bread in it? Oh, it's the best. If you haven't gone there, you've really missed out in life. I'm just telling you, you got to go and do that. Just dip your bread in there. It's really good. Well, this is about the same thing. You take a dry morsel of kind of bread and then you dip it into this. Oh, it's really good. But it does say here, a piece of bread in the vinegar. And then they sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her. Parched grain is roasted grain. They would take just the stalk with the heads on it and kind of like roasting marshmallows, but then they would just kind of put it over the fire until it burns the chaff away, caramelize and kind of roast the kernels there and everything. And it was a really good treat to be able to have as you're working out in the field. And so she got some of that as well. And she got so much, not only was she satisfied, she kept some of it back. For what? To give to Naomi when she got home. She's being blessed and she's going, I don't want this all for myself. I got to make sure that Naomi gets some of this. This shouldn't just be being bestowed upon me. I'm here to serve Naomi, and I almost feel horrible that I'm getting blessed so much. Naomi should be here. And so she keeps some back so she can give to Naomi as well. I love that. Ruth was not only satisfied, she also saved some to give Naomi at the end of the day. And it speaks of, it is Jesus who serves us, he satisfies us just so we can be satisfied. Or does he satisfy us and so we can also bless others? You know, in 2 Corinthians 1:3, it says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our tribulation so that we may be comfortable. Doesn't say that, does it? Yeah. No, it doesn't say that. Who comforts us in all our tribulation that we may be able to comfort those who are in trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. He does not comfort us so we can be comfortable. He comforts us so we can comfort others. This is how God blessed me. Let me share that with you. That's what Ruth is doing. Oh my goodness, this is so good. And it's kind of like, can I have another one? Yeah. Kind of sticks it in there and all. Because I want to give some of this to Naomi. She's got to understand, this is great. This is awesome. Whatever God's comforting you with, blessing you with, it's so you will then be able to use that to be able to bless and minister to others. It's one of the reasons we work, according to Ephesians. You work so you could do what? Save a little, have a little left over, so what? You can help those in need. God has blessed you so much with the job that you have. In such a down economy, God has blessed you that you can put a little bit aside so those who are really trying to go out and glean and work, help them out. Help them out. And then it goes on, it says, and when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young man, saying, let her glean even from among the sheaves. So, you know, as the sheaves are being bound and everything like that, you know, throw off a couple stalks to her here and there. I mean, not only do you get the best heads of grain, now you're getting stalks with all this heads of grain on it. I mean, we're going to find out in a minute, And it says, and do not reproach her. Also let the grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean. Do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. That's about 30 pounds of grain. I'm told that if you could get like 2 pounds of grain a day, that's a good day. She got 30. And so they're purposely dropping these things. An ephah is about 30 pounds. And I just want to sum it all up here. I'm going to read this a little bit, and we're going to actually start with this the next time. But I look at this, and it's Proverbs 8:35. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. That's God. When you find him, you actually find life, and you'll find favor from him. Isn't that what's going on with Ruth? She found God, and God is just blessing her socks off. Now, granted, she has to buy new socks. But it's like, wow. And it's because she's so loyal, and she's choosing the difficult way. She's choosing the narrow way. Difficult is the way that leads to life, and few will find it. She's leaving everything behind. This is going to be very difficult, but God is this way. And I'd rather have God with the difficulties than the easy life without God. She can see it. She knows this is better in the long run and has no idea how God is going to bless. But he's a God that does. And when you find him, you find life, you find favor from the Lord. And she is definitely expressing that favor. And so it goes on in Ruth 2, verse 18. It says, then she took it and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. So she brought it out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. What was that? The parched grain, the roasted grain. Whoa, look at all that you brought back. That's nothing. Check this out. Eat some of that. Where'd you get this? They were handing them out to all the employees. It was awesome. You're not an employee. I know. How's God doing that? And her mother-in-law said to her, where have you gleaned today? Not like as in a scolding mom. Where have you been today, little mister? You know? It wasn't like that. It's like, where have you gleaned today? How can this be? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law in whom she had worked and said, the man's name is, worked for today is Boaz. Does that mean anything to you? And Naomi said to her daughter, blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead. And Naomi said, this man is a relation. Now it's the right word, Gael. He's a kinsman, a near kinsman. A kinsman redeemer. This is man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives. Wow. Now, this blessing, this faith that Ruth has, is being seen in Naomi, and it's making her change. God is real. I know, that was the God that you were telling me back in our land. I got really excited about that. But it was almost being told in a way that it was almost academic to Naomi. But it was really exciting to Ruth. This happens sometimes. When somebody explains the gospel to you, you just eat it up and think it's the greatest thing in the world. And then what happens to that person who shared their faith with you all of a sudden becomes complacent, backslides, isn't excited about the Lord. But you've gone on in your relationship with the Lord and you are just stoked. And they see you later on and they go, I'm the one that shared the gospel with them. Look at what they're doing now. They're now teaching others. They're even further along in the faith and they have greater knowledge of who God is than I did. And I'm the one that shared the gospel with them 2 years ago. Why aren't I that excited? Why don't I see that in my, but I see it in him. He must be real. Why did I ever forget? Why did I ever choose to not believe? What? That's kind of where Naomi is, and she's kind of going, all those things I told you, you're acting out. Look at God's blessing. This is exciting. And now she's going to get excited. And she now knows the Lord's hand is in it. She's going, I haven't seen the Lord's hand move in years. That's because you were outside of the place of God's calling. If you're outside of the place of God's calling, you're going to have years. Constantly going out, and then you go out, and then you go out, and it's just a roller coaster.